CPS. Go. Inco. Go. PUS. Go. Surgeon. Go. Booster. Go. Copy that. We have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Talking Sound Podcast, coming to you this evening from the College of Hip Hop Knowledge here in Bastrop, Texas. I am Chris Jordan, your host. With me is Michael Pareda.
Correct.
And Jason Anderson Ebner.
That's correct.
Vice President and President of the College of Hip Hop Knowledge. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, number one, I want to say what a great facility y'all have here. I myself have, like I was telling you, been looking at building out at my house in the garage, and this is pure inspiration to come out and see a location like this built into somebody's home space.
Awesome.
And that's kind of what drove me out here. I mean, I've known about you guys for a while, like I was saying. I've seen your stuff up around town. I've seen your shows go up, all that kind of stuff, and glad to see that y'all are still continuing on and growing, getting bigger and better.
Growing,
definitely.
Refocusing, repurposing, always trying to evolve and growth.
Well, and Let's talk about that. Let's talk a little bit about the founding of the College of Hip Hop Knowledge, what its mission is, and where y'all have come since then.
Okay. Well, I started out myself alone first, doing shows around town and just working with some promoters around town. I just felt like it was being done wrong. Like there was so much pay to play going on, and just people treating shows like it was nothing.
Really. Yeah.
You know, like it didn't matter what you got booked where. None of it mattered. It was all just a joke, it felt like to me.
Yeah.
And so I thought I'd start throwing shows, and then I threw a couple shows, and I'm like, well, I need to mesh with the community more, and I started going out to more shows, and met Big Mike, and we had a couple other people we originally worked with.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, you know, business changes and
sure.
Move on.
People's goals are different, and
hopefully cordially, which was our, you know. We split cordially with the people we split ways with.
That's
definitely
always helpful.
It's a good thing, especially in a, let's just put it simply, in an incestuous music scene like Austin.
Right.
It's definitely a town that, despite its big city leanings as far as variety of music, it's a very, very tight community of musicians across the board.
Oh, it definitely is. Black Mall, real.
Oh, yeah. Rapidly.
Yeah.
Rapidly.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it'll get to the point that, you know, like the elephant will hear the fact that you had a bad hip hop show and you don't need to come to a show. It's like, you just do jazz shows. Yeah, I know, but we heard about your stuff, dude.
Right.
Like,
we heard about what happened.
Yeah. And it can be tough, especially whenever you've started something with someone ground up and then kind of, like you said, just grown on different paths. You wanted to do one thing, they wanted to provide another.
I mean, right. Still, it was, shout out to Gov Nachi, he was one we started with, and we still work with him on music and other things. And
right.
It's just where we were heading, where he was signed with a label at the time, and we were wanting to transition.
We were heading in that direction.
Yeah. So, of course, you know, he couldn't be acting
on behalf of a label.
Yeah.
Right.
Be signed by another label.
Yeah.
So, it just.
I guess you could, but that wouldn't be wise.
It was messy.
Almost, yeah. Competing with yourself, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not the best path to take.
Yeah, logistically, it just wouldn't work out.
Yeah.
And his label wasn't having it either. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and how did you, Jason, how did you originally get into hip hop? How did you originally find the scene to begin with?
I've always, in one form or fashion, man, probably skateboarding is what got me into hip hop. Was skateboarding when I was really young, 12, 13 years old, being exposed to hip hop, like, you know, Black Sheep and KRS-One and Public Enemy and, old school hip hop. That's where I come from. But in Austin, I mean, I've been around for a long time in the Austin hip hop scene, just freestyling and doing battles and stuff like that. Like I never really necessarily got into songwriting until I grew up a little bit. I don't know what it was, but it wasn't necessarily... It, when I was younger, it didn't feel right to me. I just liked freestyling, and I liked the whole scene about it, but I never really considered songwriting or the business end of it. It was just always fun and kind of a hobby to me. You know?
Sure. What was it that... I guess flip that switch, because it, that happens for all of us. Like,
it does.
Even running sound was something that I liked doing. Like, I started off in a high school theater.
Sure.
Running sound, doing lights, doing it. Had someone told me that I'd be traveling the country, making the money I make, doing what I did in high school theater, right, I would have laughed at them in the face.
Like, tell me now.
Yeah. Right. You're a crazy person right now. Right. I'm lucky I get an A for this. Right. You know, so yeah, it's a little bit of a, it can be a leap for some people to think that that it's even possible to get into that.
I think it was probably when I got in my 30s, because I had kind of not done music in a while, just kind of, you know, just, I need to get my life together. You know, we all have our periods where, you know, we have a fuck up period, and then we need to get our life in order after that, of course. Yeah. And, you know, we got our life back in order, we start thinking about stuff. And the main thing I was thinking of is, well, just, what if I knew then what I knew now? And, okay, well, I do know now what I know, so why couldn't I impart that on to younger artists and maybe help them somehow?
Yeah.
To be in a point where I could have been at that age, if someone would have taken me and said, you know, look, this is how you register your songs, this is how you copyright your songs, this is how you collect, you know, royalties from Sound Exchange, here's how you brand yourself, here's how to do logos, you know, like all these simple things that when you've been doing it for a while, it seems simple, but when you're starting out as a young artist, you have no clue. You just want to make music. That's all you want to do is make music. Yep. You have blinders on about everything else.
Yeah. And the example I give people is, remember your first time making out? Were you... Now, don't get me wrong, later on, you know the process now. It's a, it's a courtship process. Like, even just coaxing the idea out of your head, you can't rush it. It's got to be organic. It's got to be real. It's got to, like, exist on its own.
Right.
You know, like, it, just like for me, any circuit, things like that, if I can't see it in my head, I'm going to have a real problem actualizing the real world.
Right.
And it's very much the same way, you know, whether it's writing a song, what have you. You got to learn to coax that muse and treat things properly as stuff gets built. Being able to impart that knowledge on somebody, like, slow down. Be willing to take your time. Be willing to see the long play game here.
Right.
You know, of 3 years, not 6 months.
Oh, exactly. That's a big, that's a big.
And that's hard. That's hard.
Where a lot of artists run into a wall.
That's just it. And, you know, that's for me where I define the difference between musician and artist. Most of the time, for me, a musician is someone like in your world for hip hop, they'd be out turntabling one night, you know, so that they could make some cash. They'd be out rhyming on stage another night doing battles just to get their name out there. Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff. Whereas
that brings up a great argument that's in the hip hop scene.
Yeah.
Is hip hop culture or is hip hop music? Like, that's a constant argument in the scene.
I think the answer is yes. Like, seriously, I know it sounds overly simplistic, but I personally see it as yes, because there is definite, like, I was, I don't listen to a lot of hip hop anymore, but when I do listen to hip hop, it's normally early 90s to 80s hip hop is what I'm generally going toward, Boogie Down Productions, things like that.
Nice.
I was listening to Tupac on the way up here, and for me, it goes more toward the artistic, the production style, the work of people like Nate in the studio, stuff like that, who, sure, he's singing backup, but you didn't really see Nate like, hey, check out my new album.
Right.
Yeah. He wanted more the production side of things. He wanted to be more in the special sauce than to be the steak on the plate.
Right.
You know, and that to me, I think
that's like bucket list.
I think it's very much a statement in and of itself of careers like that being both hip hop and style.
Sure.
Definitely. You know, because the work that he does, even in the background, rhyming in the back, stuff like that, totally contributes to the style of that song.
For sure.
You know, so I think it is very much lifestyle, and it is very much music.
Sure.
I don't see, quite honestly, how the two can be separate.
Well,
how they can't be intertwined.
I always see it just as hip hop is the overall culture. And there's elements of the culture.
Sure,
right.
Just like you're saying, like an actual, you know, like working hip hop musician. Would be a turntablist one night.
Exactly.
You know, rapping another night.
Yeah.
Engineering, produced, whatever. If you're really
fingers wet anywhere they can
be. Music, you're going to find multi facets you can insert yourself in.
Yeah. Exactly. And speaking of that, let's insert Michael into the conversation, the vice president of the College of Hip Hop Knowledge. How was it that you came to be involved with hip hop yourself? How did you find that? And how has that brought you to the College of Hip Hop Knowledge?
I grew up on hip hop music. My oldest sister was, I guess, a teenager in the, I don't want to date her, but she was a, she was a teenager, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s. And so a lot of the artists that he referenced was stuff that I was listening to because she was playing it. Run DMC, you know, Rakim, all of those type of influences, obviously, that kind of brought hip hop to where it is now. And it just touched me. Just something that I always gravitated more towards hip hop music than any other music. And my parents were very diverse in their music. They listened to from Tejano music to old blues to jazz to dance music, disco. So as far as an overall aspect of music, pretty versatile on what I like to listen to, but hip hop grabbed my heart at a young age. And I think a lot of things was growing up in the neighborhood that I grew up in. A lot of those things that some of that music was talking about or referencing, I would see with my eyes, with my own eyes.
Yeah.
And so I was able to connect more with hip hop than any other genre of music that I was ever exposed to as a kid. And from that, it just, I got into it. My sister, again, had a lot of friends that were either producing or DJing at the time, breakdancing, graffiti artists, things of that nature. And I gravitated towards that. And, you know, always wanted to make my own music. But as a young kid, we would do it for fun in high school and things of that nature. We would get together and we would have like 3 or 4 line battles where we would team up, say, you know, me and a buddy against 2 other buddies, and we were just cutting each other down. We would just, it was a battle like it is now, you know, for the most part, freestyling, just over beats, making fun of each other and laughing, having a good time.
Anybody ever get punched?
There's a couple times. We used to have boxing gloves. And so when it got too far, we'd always do it at my house. Always,
not in the face. That's how I make my living.
Yeah. I always controlled the mood. It was at my house. But if people got angry, we did have 2 pairs of boxing gloves.
Take it outside.
We would go outside. But yeah, that was really my first influence. And how that brought me to College Hip Hop Knowledge was back in 2016, I had the opportunity to go to the East Coast just from being out in the scene and performing a lot. I actually used to do a lot of battle rapping, and I won a couple of them and I caught some people's eyes that were looking to do something with who they felt were upper echelon of hip hop artists in the city of Austin for what they liked. And so I was lucky enough to be able to do that. And during that time, I was just working my ass off, man. I was getting on shows, you know, at that time, a lot of people didn't know who I was. And I think that actually played into my favor, because when they saw me do battles, they were like, oh, man, instantly, who are you? Where have you been?
Yeah.
Well, you know, how can I find your music? Things of that nature. And I was out doing shows, and he reached out to me first, I want to say, and said, hey, I see you, you know, doing a lot of shows and stuff like that. You know, I want to see if you can get on a show. And I said, well, do you have any openings? And actually at the time he didn't, at his first show that I saw him doing. And then he had somebody drop off the show because of scheduling conflict or something. And he reached back out to me. And that's the first show I did. And once I did, I saw how organic, how important a culture was to him. He had like some of that graffiti that's on the wall over there. He had his good friend was painting live at the show, and actually did. I still have it. He made pictures of all the artists that were performing that night. And I thought that was really cool because hip hop was, shout out Mehmet, Tony Franzetti. I thought it was incredible because it made me feel like I met somebody that treated hip hop and respected it as much as I did, how important it was to me. And so from that moment on, really, you know, we started talking about what we talked about before this, about the struggles of hip hop in Austin, the pay to play scheming, going out and performing, and, you know, as artists, feeling like we're worthy, if we're going to bring people out and people are requesting us, we're worthy of pay and things of that nature. Yeah. And so, you know, from that point on, we...
Why am I paying you to bring people to drink at your bar?
Exactly. You know, and it's a common trap because a lot of people, there's limited opportunities out there. There was at that time. There's more now. And so people will jump at the opportunity just to get on stage so people will see them or hear them.
Try that with some other genres.
And see what happens. Yeah, I don't know
And it does happen. Like I said, there are the definite like battle of the band contests that go on. I won't mention any production company names on air. You people out there know who they are, where you're like, your band's been together for 6 months now, you've recorded a demo, you've got like three songs down, you go out and you pay like $60 to be on the stage at Emo's,
right,
and go be in this battle of the bands, and at the end of it you get like $150 or something prize money,
right?
You know, it paid like enough for you to the money's good in the bar,
right?
You know, it's like when you go to the casino over at like Lake Livingston, Lake Livingston, where you know they can only gamble for prizes.
Ah, okay.
It's like a grown folks showbiz.
Yeah,
you know,
winning
great
tickets.
You got this many credits. Here's what you can walk out with.
Right. That's hilarious.
You know, and very much the same way. And there, it's tough.
It's
tough as an artist because you want to get your stuff out there. You want to be heard.
Right.
And I guess that's a lot of what the College of Hip Hop Knowledge is all about.
Correct.
Is like you were saying earlier, Jason, being able to take these young artists that you see that have potential and kind of grab hold of them by the shoulders before they start getting swooped up by the machine, to speak.
And what we tell
and by the mentality
artists is a show to me anymore, what I think of a show is I think of it as a sales pitch.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, if you don't have any product you're selling, then it's a useless pitch.
Yeah.
So if you don't have any content and distribution you're trying to sell or market, what's the damn point of like even paying to perform or doing any of that?
Yeah, right.
I mean, you got some fans. Great.
Could have done that.
Have them come over to your house and serenade them?
Could have done that for free on Facebook.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Even if you do get some fans, what are you going to do with them?
What do you have to offer them?
You don't have any music out there.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
it's pointless.
And that's why I was saying earlier. It's that it's very much that concept of the first time you make out. How did you approach that?
Right.
What did you expect to happen after she said yes?
You know, it's funny because when we started throwing the shows, you know, we were kind of taking it by the horns, but we've learned a lot from those points to where, oh man, we shouldn't have done that, or man, we scheduled too many artists, or this wasn't the right venue for this show, or this wasn't the right date. We should have only done the festival maybe one day instead of 2 days.
Yeah.
And so in retrospect, you look back, just like you're saying, say, oh man, I shouldn't have done that move. Maybe I should have done this move.
You know? It took me, I was like 37 before I got married because... Yeah, like I just had not found the right person.
Sure.
You know, the method wasn't there. And once I found it, I was like, oh boy, howdy. You know, much like I've said it before on this show, I was telling you gentlemen earlier, did rock and roll for years. Mm-hmm. Used to work at Frank Irwin Center doing shows, all kinds of stuff, festivals, everything. Toured with bands. And Yeah, the day I found corporate AV, I was like, where the hell has this been? It's not for everybody. Right. Like, there are friends of mine that are rock and roll techs, you know, club technicians that are like, oh, get me in on one of those. And I'm like, oh, no. Like, you would be the guy that I sit next to and feel the waves of pain from all day. Because you don't know how to handle the hurry up and wait. Like, right. Yes, we are waiting 4 hours for the client right now.
Right.
That's exactly what we're doing. Mm-hmm. We're sitting here at a tech booth waiting for them to come in and possibly run through a presentation for tomorrow.
Wow.
They may not even show up.
Right.
You cool with that?
As long as I get paid.
A lot of rock and roll people are like, I got to do something right now.
I can't just sit
and
there.
You could just see it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is something that, you know, even finding the right niche in the industry, finding out whether or not you are a performer or a producer.
Right.
Because like you were saying, Jason, you started out battle rapping, doing all that kind of stuff, and quite obviously have stepped into the producer and control chair.
I have. A lot more of the production and engineering side of things. And again, I think that's a byproduct of getting older, too. I mean, hip-hop's a young man's game, honestly. It's
sure.
Mm-hmm. It's weird too, because like you don't see like a young rock group being like, oh, you know, forget the Beatles, whatever, they're old news, their music's no good, you know, like
we should talk more. Well,
maybe that's a bad example to you.
No, I know what you're saying though.
But like they're more using it to inspire them and form their new music and bring their new music to other levels, whereas in hip-hop, there's a lot of this misconception where the old has to hate on the new, or it's outdated, I can't listen to it anymore, it needs to be new, fresh, it needs always kind of be different, you know?
Right. Well, and that's a good point, especially right now on the cusp of Ice Cube just releasing his new album, all that kind of stuff. Have you had a chance to hear that work yet?
I haven't listened
neither,
to his
neither
album.
Neither have I. And I heard a bunch of guys on my last show in Vegas just before Christmas that were some guys I've worked with before that are very into the hip-hop scene there and play and perform. And there were a couple that were praising it and a couple that were utterly
dogging. It's always gonna be like
always.
That.
And it was like straight 50-50.
Right.
You know, and it was funny to see like one of them was older, one of them was younger that was praising it, one of them was older, one of them was younger that was dogging.
Exactly.
It. He needs to get out the game. He doesn't have it anymore.
He's washed up.
He doesn't have the edge. And it's like, well, you know, and I guess I kind of have the attitude of same thing with people that stopped liking Metallica. Mm-hmm. They stopped having an edge, but they also grew as people, musicians. They were no longer using a bottle of whiskey a piece a day and getting into fights in the studio and like, screw you, I don't ever want to see you again. Like, that wasn't happening. They actively became friends again and started making music. And the music was a little different.
Right.
But they lost a huge chunk of fan base.
Huge.
And one of my favorite quotes ever is Hetfield. Like, yeah, we sold out. We sell out every night.
Yeah.
Like, you can say we sold out. These other people quite obviously love us.
Right.
You know.
I have a good with them.
Well, sure, but it's
to a 13-year-old
it's almost
girl.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm with you. And don't tell me you didn't still make your money. Don't tell me you didn't still make your nut off distribution.
Right.
I very much take the Grateful Dead mentality with my music. If you want to take my music and sample it, thank you. I tip my hat to you if you enjoy the shit I make.
That's the foundations of hip hop.
You know,
and yeah, exactly. And we saw the first real cases of that start, of course, coming out with Milli Vanilli back in the day, Vanilla Ice, all that kind of controversy with the lip syncing and you know, and that's just standard.
That's how rappers perform.
That's standard. Yeah.
Most
here's
of
my stem tracks.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say like every third line on the microphone.
I'm going to rap over my vocals.
And you know, I guess y'all are a bit more privy to that end of things, putting on shows, things like that. How do y'all feel about that?
Totally against it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you tend to not put stem track artists on your stage?
Oh, we don't have a... I mean, it's very rare one of those artists would be on our stage. Right. And if they were, we'd probably not have them on a show.
Again, we've had people before. Luckily, from what we've put out and the vibes that we've put out, they've reverberated and come back to us in almost the same light, which has been great because I think it really shows what we're about and who we are. And a lot of times, there's just, to be honest, I mean, it's not, everybody's vibe isn't going to match up.
No.
And it's something, I mean, we have a group together. We have a group called Academics, and our DJ, shout out DJ Berlin, who's been DJing in Austin for like 20 years. He's awesome. You know, we perform, and what's acceptable in my eyes and probably Jason's eyes is, you know, it's okay to have a dub bass line of your hook, of your chorus in your song when you're performing.
Sure.
To make it sound more pronounced.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
fill it out a little
we
bit.
Don't have any backing track vocals on our verses when we rap our songs. It's all us.
Yeah.
And that goes into preparation, learning them, controlling your breath right. It's a performance.
Holding your microphone.
Yeah. If people want to, we call it. Yeah.
I saw one of my friends the other day that literally posted like the instructions that come inside of the SM58. It's like, do not cover the microphone.
Yeah.
You will get adverse sounds.
Right. And it's funny.
It was like circled like 18 times.
You'll see a lot of artists that do that, and you can't hear them.
I used to have it at churches all the time, and I was like, wow.
Right.
Wow. Where'd you learn to hold the mic?
Right.
You want me to like get you a studio mic out on stage so that you don't have to hold it?
Right. Something so that you don't sound like you're in a cave.
It's
cool, bro.
You know, that's the thing. That's the thing. It looks cool. And that's kind of what we're talking about here, folks, mm-hmm. is the fact of there's putting yourself out there and there's honing your package.
Right. Definitely.
There's honing your package. And even part of that is the professionalism of being able to approach the engineer in a venue,
right.
telling them what you need in your mix,
definitely,
what your DJ needs in his mix, mm-hmm. Providing your own DI boxes for DJs,
right.
and bringing them, you know, because, oh, you don't have DIs? Well, I don't know, man.
Funny.
Great. What are we going to do? Just turn that RCA around into an XLR?
Right. It's funny you mentioned
perfect
that.
Fidelity.
Because one of my buddies does a couple of South By gigs every year. He was talking about some band that came into town, and it was just like random, you know, how South By is.
Crazy assemblage of gear.
Yeah, this one band came up and said, we need 16 DIs. And he's like, 16 DIs? What the hell? He's like, you know, every bar should have three or four.
We have an analog kick drum. That's
right.
All we brought that's analog.
Exactly. And he's like, dude, I don't have 16 DIs. What
You're
the
lucky
hell?
I got 16 channels on the board.
Right.
That are full channels.
Exactly.
It's not like, you know, eight and the rest of it's all quarter inch.
Right.
You know, yeah. And it really is about that preparedness, like you said, having your words down, not
right.
having them on a piece of paper in front of you.
Right.
If you're freestyling, that's a totally different thing.
Right.
But even that's something of be careful how much of that you do live if that's not your image.
Right. Exactly.
You know, that can actually detract.
Yeah, you can
from
put
your
image.
All it takes, it's very much a industry just like mine, where you're as good as your last gig.
Exactly.
You know, and especially if you get out there and you're freestyling, things really don't go well.
Right.
After a night of it going really well on stage, like, is it worth that?
Right.
At that moment, you know, is it always worth to take the challenge?
Right.
To step up on stage and freestyle?
Don't want to be whack.
You know, and just curious. Is it always worth the challenge? Because, I mean, there's always the gauntlet's been thrown down in front of you.
Right.
Good as we are at freestyling, is there?
Oh, yeah, there it is.
I tell you what. I'm kind of a freestyle snob, because if I see a freestyle cypher going on and no one is making me push myself or wanting to, I won't rap. I'll be like, oh, y'all go ahead, because there's been many times where I do it and then nobody else wants to rap.
Yeah.
Because it's like, whoa, man, I can't rap like this. I do this freestyle. It's for fun.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm not going to go out there and sound stupid or sound terrible.
It is a cypher.
Right.
The whole point of cypher is you got to feel the vibe.
Right.
You want to freestyle.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So, and explain that concept of cypher. I mean, like, I'm somewhat familiar with it coming from the jam band world. The fact of synergy, being able to just step up on stage and they go, we're in G. Cool.
Right.
Or just feel your moment to come in.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah, exactly that same thing. Cypher is you just have this exchange of energy. Yeah. You just feel it when you're in when you're in the perfect cypher, everyone in that cypher is just
It's basically, perfectly. You know, you got a mic and a beat's playing and somebody starts it off and you pass the mic around and try to keep the energy going. You obviously try to be sharp with it, just like as a musician.
Yeah.
You don't want to start playing, you get out of key, or you're too loud. I actually started rapping with jam bands before I wrote anything or performed any songs on my own. And I never rapped. Like, it's funny you say that, because I've had other MCs come over to jams that we have and they want to rap on every part of the song, and they don't understand there might be a bridge that the musicians fall into that doesn't need words on it. You back out, you lay off of that, you know, you sit back, or maybe it turns into a hook and then I make a hook on the fly and we all of a sudden make a song because the band is making a song. And then when you feel the pocket to get in there and your rhythm is right, boom, you jump back in. And that's kind of how it is with a cypher, as far as you should have some etiquette. Number one, you don't want to be stepping on other people's toes while they're rapping. Then you have the other MC that wants to rap a whole 3 minutes straight.
16 bars, fool, 16 bars. Yeah,
when there's, you know, 30 other people on stage, you know, and it's like, come on, man, that's enough. That's when you got to take the mic from them.
Yeah.
You don't need that cane from... Or was that Apollo?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yank them.
Gotta have the clown and the broom.
Exactly.
Yeah. It even harkens back, though, to me, like, cypher is just to being at the park, like, parties back when I was younger. You just have a circle.
Even that. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody just has this energy. It's it's amazing when it's...
When it's on.
It ebbs, it flows, it comes, it goes throughout the evening.
Exactly.
And really do. It takes some time to get attuned to that. It really does take, a lot of it is working with other people.
Exactly.
And most of my working with other people came from behind the console, live engineering, 5 nights a week, 4 or 5 bands a night.
Right.
10 years doing it. Mm-hmm. That's some insane math. That's a lot of zeros.
It is.
Just a band, much less like 3 to 5 people in a band. You start doing how many musicians I worked with. Just mind-numbing. And you really do get to the point where when you have the same bands on your stage on a regular basis, especially jam bands and stuff, I could feel when their hook was.
Right.
Like the reggae band that I worked with every Sunday, I knew when they were going
into
No Woman Don't Cry. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter what song they were coming out of.
Right.
I heard those 3 notes that they hit all the time, every time, that were not in No Woman Don't Cry, but was their signal of
to go
get ready of where we're going.
Right.
And I'd dial in my echoes and be ready with the crazy slapback that they love.
That's a good live sound engineer.
But it's very much being present of mind, and being willing to step back.
Right.
Being willing to step back and listen, see where things lie in a mix, where you lie in a mix.
Yeah. Right.
And as you guys have evolved as a business, going from putting on shows to being a label to now having this great space of a studio here, when did y'all start to look at building your own space? When did you, I guess that's one of the questions I get from everybody is, hey, Chris, when did you decide to go full on business in LLC? Mine was it was always in my mind, but the day that I held my baby and my wife came out of anesthesia, I was like, we're going in LLC next month.
Right.
You know, I'm drawing up paperwork.
Heck yeah.
LLC and label was kind of always the plan, I think.
It was.
We kind of discussed, like, shows are great, but how could we ultimately help artists more? And it was really the label side of it. As far as building our own space, that kind of came out of necessity because of a producer, engineer. Again, we will leave nameless, but kind of had bad business dealings with a producer, engineer we were working with that we kind of wanted to include in the label and be the label's engineer and everything. And
right. It fell apart.
Out so cordially is the other one we're talking about.
Things don't always devolve in the same way.
They don't.
So the space came out of necessity. This space is really young though. It's only like 2 weeks old.
2 weeks
now,
old.
And it's not.
So he built this booth at his previous place. Basically because of where we were working at, where we were recording our project that we are gonna release this year. That relationship ended on a bad note.
And I had built his space.
Yeah. he's a carpenter. Yeah.
I build houses for a living, so this is all.
This is super easy. Yeah. This is fun project work for you.
Right. Yeah.
And so when that happened, he said, well, screw that. I'm just going to build our own setup, and I'm going to make it better and bigger. And it's going to be exactly what we need and what we want.
Yeah.
And so he did. He built it, and you know, he got blessed by moving out here and getting this place and put it back up. And then, I mean, his other spot was in a garage.
Yeah, his spot was a little dinky garage. The booth was most of the garage. Mm. And then, like, as far as the mix area and everything, there was no treatment to the mix area. It was a rental and a duplex. Yeah. So I could only do so much physical space.
Yeah.
The booth was made so it could be removed. I had all my acoustic panels were just Velcroed up so I could
reuse them. We need to talk.
But I had it set up in a rental so I could take the booth down. And
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly how I'm designing my studio right now, because I'm in a rental and it's like, I don't need.
You have to be able to.
I don't need the whole garage.
Right.
But, oh man, I've got it designed with like building walls out of pallets and stuffing it. So it's like free. I can go out and go anywhere on Craigslist and pick up a truckload of pallets.
Yeah.
You know, just cover it with 1/4-inch ply on the sides and stuff it full of double thick insulation and put them on hinges. So whenever I go to move, just fold up two walls together and
move them out of the way.
Throw them in the back of a truck.
Any construction site.
and honestly, it's funny, I'm speaking on his behalf, but I've been there with him through this whole process. You know, I think a lot of what we got from our project that we spent way too much money on and lost his friendship and business partnership was not really that great of a mix on the files that we received.
Yeah.
And so he took it upon himself, said, man, well, I can do better than that, I think, for what we did and what we paid. And he jumped in engineering just probably over two years, maybe?
On this, I dabbled for about 4 or 5 years.
Right.
I'm still very young in engineering, maybe 2-3 years at the most strong in it,
But he's devoted a lot of time to where I've heard some of his older mixes and stuff, like he was just playing me when you got here. And you can definitely hear where his ear, I've been blessed to be around a lot of engineers, live engineers and studio engineers. And he's done a lot of work and he's going in the right direction. Nice. Gives me a lot of confidence in what he's doing on the boards as well.
And that's great because, it really is a collaborative effort from both the engineer, especially in stuff like hip hop, where typically it's engineer/producer.
Right.
You are. That's interesting because the executive producer is kind of lost in the mix anymore.
Right.
And a lot of people's EPs.
Well, and even that, like I was discussing with someone not too long ago about even the concept of my last guest for the year, Eric Betancourt. He's a singer-songwriter in Austin, great guitar player, amazing. And I've known him for years and years from Maine. Great musician. And he was like, you know, like I've spent like two and a half years getting this album together.
Darden Smith. Me and my brother built his studio.
Oh, okay.
So.
Wow. Nice. Yeah, it was just one of those. He was like, I spent like a summer recording tracks with people. Then I redid some tracks, you know, and I've slowly put things together and it's coming together. But he's like, really, with the way things are now, I'm almost like, fuck that.
Right.
Like, I'm almost like, forget putting out a full-length album and making all this stuff happen. Mm-hmm. I should just release them as, like, a little 2-3-song compilation as I write them and finish them.
Yep.
And just, it's more important to get things out there
get
now
good content out
than
there.
To try and make a full-scoping album.
It's really hard.
Like
to,
rock and roll used to.
It's really
like
hard
that.
About the impact that can happen with a full project if you don't already have a big following. So a lot of times what it is creating that buzz, a single or a couple songs at a time, or a 4 or 5 track EP at a time, for people to say, oh, that's pretty good. Does this guy have more music? And there you go.
People's attention spans have gone.
It's not what it used
They're
to
totally
be.
Totally different.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's totally
well,
different.
Well, and you can see it. Hip hop is a special example. And I say that with the greatest of respect for the art form, because the sampling has even gotten lazy.
It has.
Sure.
You know?
It has.
And
it's
a solid loop.
I think it started getting more lazy toward the late 90s, early 2000s. I saw it right as No Limit came out with like their second round of albums. Was when they really started like, okay, so I'm basically going to use half the tracks from his album and half the tracks from his.
Yeah.
And we're going to screw a couple of them because DJ Screw's hip in Houston
right
now. You know, and it was like, okay, y'all wrote like 10 original albums and now you're just using
copy
backing tracks
for
other people's shit.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, I guess visionary.
Right.
You know, because you're able to pull it off and sell it. And
well, Master P was a hustler. So.
He was.
Yeah.
That ghetto dope, man.
Yeah.
It was something special.
It was.
Same thing about grunge and power chords.
Yeah.
Right.
It, very much.
Yeah.
Very much. And, you know, even punk, new wave, you know, that kind of stuff. People thought that it was something that was just going to pop up, crop up, and be gone.
Right.
And it had staying power. Just the other day, I was trying to explain to my wife how, no, I'm sorry, Depeche Mode is not new wave.
That's classic now.
I was like, oh, no.
Nirvana called classic rock the other day. I'm like, oh,
no, man.
Old, right?
When I was living in Maine, driving around listening to the oldies station and heard Paradise by the Dashboard Light on the oldies station, I was like, damn, I had that on 8-track. I am old. I had 8-track.
You are old, bro.
You know, it was like, holy crap. Because, things progresses so rapidly. Like you said, Nirvana is now on classic rock stations, stuff like the stuff that we grew up with.
But they created a whole vibe,
90s.
You know? Like
they did.
There were so many bands that were influenced by them after that. You know?
And what's funny, though, is that even bands like Screaming Trees, their first album came out in 78.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And their sound really didn't change a whole lot.
Right.
So it was like, wow, it took that long for the industry
to catch
up to that kind of sound.
Yep.
Sure.
You know?
Yep.
And it really does say something to the stick-to-itiveness of an artist to say, no, this is my vision.
Right.
This is what I want to do. Even hip-hop back in the day, like I said, people thought it was a flash in the pan.
Right.
That it was just going to be there and be gone.
And that's
it. It's a little fad.
Yeah.
You know.
Just still like, the constant struggle between mainstream and underground hip-hop.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We have a saying is good music is good music. I mean.
That's it.
You know, if you can make good music, somebody's going to want to listen to it. If you can get it out and get it in front of the right people.
Yeah.
You know?
And for me, it's all about production for me. I love being able to listen to a song like the 10th time and hear new things.
Right.
To always be finding something new in a mix.
Mm-hmm.
I remember years ago, I'm a as I was confessing earlier, I'm a huge jam band fan and loved the Grateful Dead for many, many years. And Shakedown Street was one of my favorite albums. Knew it backward and forward, can play it, all that stuff. And then I started collecting vinyl. And I got a vinyl copy of Shakedown Street. And I'm not going to lie, I had a little bit of reefer to smoke. But my brother was like, what the fuck are you doing? And I kept like bouncing the needle back to this one spot. Mm-hmm. And I was like, listen, like close your eyes and listen. And that left speaker, there is a freaking maraca, like 30 feet away from that microphone. It just sounds like some old hippie in the back, like, yeah, man. Just like, dude, you can't stop Charlie and his maraca. Like, EQ that shit out. And that's what had happened. Like, I kept queuing up the same part on CD and popping the B button on my stereo to get it over there, A-B-ing it. And I'm like, listen, there's no maraca. It was literally so soft, it was silenced out as background noise in the digital capture of the analog tracks.
But on the vinyl, you could hear it.
And it was like,
it was like,
exactly. Yeah. And it's like, wow, like that's when the world of production really opened up for me, where it was like,
that's awesome,
dude, you can get such nuance in sound and put things in there that, like, as many times as I've heard this, I've never heard I've never noticed that until I heard it in that format,
right?
It was just crazy huge. And people ask me all the time, and my music is no disassembly, how do you get that crazy like 90s club vibe? I'm like, I'm using crazy 90s synthesizers and beat machines, like the same rave DJs that you like to use, you know, stuff like that's how I get that sound. I don't, I'm not an in the box guy. Like I, my system for me is like a really big four track with no tape. I'm not using it for effects. I'm not using it. I use it for maybe some quantization. Let's get things as close as possible here, because I'm not going to buy an actual clock. I'm just not. I'm not doing things that need a clock in my home studio.
Abacus.
Exactly. Well, I give it the old film treatment, where it's like, okay, I will start everything 5 seconds in. On the five. Here we go. On the five. So I can trim it to that and just bloop, 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 bloop. Trim everything to 5 seconds, and there it is the way it should be. assumptive mixing.
Definitely.
But it's, you know, as you said earlier, you've built a few people's studios. As we kind of wrap things up here, I want to talk more about the studio that you've built.
Sure.
The studio that Jason built here. What was it that, like you said, it was a point of necessity, but when you built, did you build with the idea of expansion? Did you think about those kind of things? A lot of, and I mean, you build studios for people, so I'm sure you did.
When I built the first rendition of the booth, like I said, I built it totally be removable, because I knew at some point I wouldn't always be in that rental, and it was going to go in my dream studio at some point, but needed the space. I didn't have the space, so it was hard to really, you know, envision how the studio would be without having the actual space. And then my wife and I, you know, thankfully this year found this house, and the garage was just perfect. I mean, if you saw what this looked like before, it was
it's crazy.
A bare bones garage. There was nothing in here. And so just kind of planning it out. I had already the dimensions of the booth, of course.
Sure.
Since I had already built it. And then it was just kind of planning around there. That's going to be a bathroom eventually, too. Behind that door. And it's kind of phase two. I wanted to get the main space.
Sure.
First.
And how long was it from inception to what we're sitting in now?
About 3 months.
3 months?
Months working after work.
Sure, sure.
Weekends.
Spare time, weekends.
Yeah, I had an out-of-town job for a while, too, so about 4 days a week I was out of town. So.
Groovy.
Yeah, about 3 months was the build. Like I said, it helped a lot that the booth, like I said, it was the second build on it, so a lot of stuff was already cut, ready to go in. There wasn't as much work I had to put into doing all the cuts and assembly on the booth.
Well, and you did it properly, with the floated floor, floated ceiling. It's completely floated off of everything.
And I even researched on like angles of surfaces. Like everything in that booth is 13 degrees to one corner.
Yeah. So it's slightly trapezoidal, not actually square.
Exactly. It's not square. Nothing's perfectly square in it. It's like the eye can't see it, but if you put a level on it, the level will show you it's about 13 degrees.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's almost imperceptible to the eye.
Yes.
But it's what's necessary for proper room treatment.
It helps you trap that sound just right in that corner. So no matter where you put the mic in that booth or where you have the sound in that booth, it's always going to be registering on your boards off that one corner.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so important to put that kind of detail, that kind of thought, not just into studios that you're building, home studios that you're building. The one thing I always recommend to people, of course, having the HD Universal Network and doing podcasts. I'm active in a lot of podcast groups and get people's questions all the time. You know, what should I, like, I put on a podcasting boot camp, you know, where it's like, come learn the intricacies of podcasting,
because
much like being an artist, there's a lot that you may not realize, you know. And even to put on an artist boot camp like that, you know, bi-monthly in town, something like that, be something really good to think about, you know, where you team up with a local, My accountant, for instance, is specifically a music accountant. That's all he does. You want his card? Let me know. I'll give it to him.
Definitely.
Because he's great. Yeah. but that's all he does is music clients and stuff like that. Oh, well. You got it in-house.
Literally.
I married an improv comedian, so if I need something written,
that's
she's
awesome.
My lady.
You get free laughs, man.
Treated this for my neighbors too.
Sure. Like
my exterior walls are double walls with a space in it with offset studs.
It's two doors.
And
double door. I saw
double
that.
Double doors to, you know, kind of give a vacuum for the sound so it doesn't escape. And I can crank it up and it's really loud. I have the eights and the fives and the woofer under here. So,
yep.
I mean, it gets really loud, but outside you can't hear it.
Yeah. And I did the same thing with my home studio. Because I'm in a temporary space, I'm renting. My advice to people is go hit up some Harbor Freight, get yourself a few cheap moving blankets, and put them in the window just up against the glass, and then from there start out with thick studio foam. Then pop it in and then just seal it up with a piece of plywood. I have little like latches on mine and handles where if I need to, like whenever I go to move out, it's just plop,
off.
Pull it off like a box and take it with me.
You take walls too, and you build the walls, and then you just put basically 3/4, like the foam plywood and 4x8 sheets. You cut strips and you can stick it under the bottom and top plate of your walls.
Oh.
And just kind of pressurize it in there so it won't ruin, you know, the drywall on your rental.
Yeah.
But it'll be a sealed up.
Sealed environment, exactly.
And it's just pressure.
Yeah.
Lots of little tricks.
Exactly. And, you know, it really is, number one, it helps. I live in a neighborhood where people enjoy their car stereos. so it definitely helps on the podcasting end for me not to be constantly like the old curmudgeon outside. I'm trying to record, damn it. Keep it down. I got microphones. It's how I make a living. You know, but on top of that, whenever I'm mixing, whenever I'm doing my electronic music, especially my really odd electronic music. Yeah, like it's nice that I don't hear complaints from the neighbors.
That's awesome.
Like a power subwoofer and all that kind of stuff.
I just hear complaints from the wife.
Yeah. Yeah. My son loves it. My wife does not.
Yeah.
And where can people go to find out more about the College of Rock and Roll Knowledge? Where can they go to find out? Do you book time in this studio space? You know, where can they go to find all the information about you guys?
They can go to our website, www.chhk512.com. Stands for College of Hip Hop Knowledge, 512, obviously, in the Austin area. They can find us on Facebook, College of Hip Hop Knowledge. Our Twitter is at chhknow. which is CHH No.
Oh, it's at College HH No.
College HH No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Instagram, College of Hip Hop Knowledge. And yes, we are booking slots for the studio. Right. They can reach us at our email, which is collegeofhiphopknowledge@gmail.com.
All right.
It's simple.
Yeah.
That's it.
We try to streamline it for sure.
Yeah, most definitely. And, congratulations, you guys, not just on the strides you've made business-wise and the separations you've made as far as that's a moment in life.
It
when,
is.
Not only when you've started and registered a business, but when you've gone like full on with your business and decided like this, I'm jumping both feet first.
Yeah.
You know, so congratulations on that step. Congrats on this beautiful space that you have.
Thank you.
I'm a jealous man. and I have a lot of toys.
We can talk.
Well, let's do that. On that note, everybody, while you're online, checking out the College of Hip Hop Knowledge and the great work of Michael Pareda and Jason Anderson Ebner, please do go on and check out the Talking Sound Show. That is where you can find all the great episodes. TalkingSoundShow.com is the website. You can also find things like the interactive map of the United States of companies that hire freelance AV technicians. If you're a guy like me who does freelance AV and you're out mixing in clubs, if you're out, you want to get into the corporate AV game, there's a whole list of companies that hire freelance AV technicians. Go check that out. If you know of a company that hires that isn't on there, let me know. I'll add it. No charge. It's all about paying it forward, folks. So once again, guys, thank you so much for taking the time. Thank you so much for everybody for this is actually episode one of season five. So welcome
awesome.
To season five, everybody,
awesome.
As a belated intro. That's it. So on that note, thank you again, gentlemen. Make sure to go check out College of Hip Hop Knowledge. Check out Talking Sound Show, our parent network, HGUniversalNetwork.com. And until next time, everybody, keep reaching for 11. Take care of yourself and each other and your hearing. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.